It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo, it is hump day. Welcome to the show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter, and we'd appreciate it if you'd go over to Facebook and give us a like. We've got a great show planned for you today. We will be going through some headlines in this first segment, second segment. Tim McCormick, he is a candidate for district attorney up in Adams and Broomfield counties. And, I mean, there's so much going on over in the district attorney arena, our police officers, and so that'll be a great conversation. And then in the third and fourth segment, we'll be talking with Anthony Davies. He's an associate professor of economics at Duquesne University, and he's co-authored a book, Cooperation and Coercion, How Busy Buddies Became Busy Bullies, and What That Means for Economics and Politics. Producer Steve, that's going to be a really interesting conversation.
Wow, is that ever apropos for contemporary Colorado politics.
You got it. So that'll be a great conversation in segments three and four. My friends, we need to continue to have conversations. We look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. And so we need to be asking these questions that Rudyard Kipling, who's the author of The Jungle Book, lived at the turn of the century, turning to the 20th century. He said, I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. That is the foundation for putting on your thinking cap and for critical thinking. And those are the, you know, those are words that you can use when you're engaging in conversation with others. It's like, well, why would they do that? What is the goal? You know, those are good questions, Steve.
There was a seventh person in that group. Did you know it?
Who?
What's for lunch?
On that note, thank you to this great team that I get to work with, producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, and the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Greatly appreciate all of you. And you listeners, I got to meet some new listeners on Monday night at Water's Edge Winery when we did the three punches to knock down democratic socialism. And I appreciate each and every one of you. And today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. We've got a lot going on out there, and we need to be engaged citizens each and every day. Our inspiration and wisdom for today, I went to Frederick Bastiat. I was looking for cooperation and coercion, and Bastiat came up. And Bastiat was a French economist, a writer, and prominent member of the French liberal school. He was a member of the French National Assembly, and Bastiat developed the economic concept of opportunity cost and introduced the parable of the broken window. As an advocate of classical economics and the economics of Adam Smith, his views favored a free market and influenced the Austrian school. He was born in 1801. He died in 1850. And Steve, we talked about the broken window theory. Was that Monday, I think, regarding yes. Giuliani?
Yes.
And so there's really two broken window theories out there. There's the one that's attributed to Giuliani in cleaning up New York. And that is that if you have a building that has a broken window, if you don't fix it, it's not long before there's other kinds of crime that start to affect that building. More broken windows, graffiti, and then the neighborhood many times will have more and more crime. So there's that theory. There's also the theory that from an economic standpoint that those that we're talking about destroying things. So those folks up in Seattle or those folks that broke the windows at the Brown Palace down here, there are those that would say, well, we are creating an economic event because we broke the window and somebody's going to have to fix it. And that creates economic activity.
Oh, please.
Yeah, there is that theory. Yeah, there is that theory. And Bastiat pushed back on that and said, actually, no, because it ends up becoming a wash. So even if the shopkeeper had insurance or whatever, he's just getting back to whole. And granted, there's other things that happen, but that is then taking money away from him that he could be using for other things. So,
okay, that's why that was why I responded the way I did. So eventually, he has to pay.
Yes.
Yes.
And so, yes, there was an economic event that happened, but the actual person with the property rights, it's a wash for him. And so it takes money from his pocket that he could actually be using for other things. Did I explain that pretty well?
You did. Okay. Now, is this a natural segue to what we decided would be the number one thing to talk about this morning?
Close, but I've got to, yes, probably.
All right.
Probably. Oh,
lead on.
Oh, you're good. Okay.
Lead on.
Okay. I'm going to give the inspiration/wisdom from Bastiat, and then we're going to talk about that. Okay. He says, when misguided public opinion honors what is despicable and despises what is honorable, punishes virtue and rewards vice, encourages what is harmful and discourages what is useful, applauds falsehood and smothers truth under influence or insult, a nation turns its back on progress and can be restored only by the terrible lessons of catastrophe. And that's Frederick Bastiat.
There's another natural segue to what we're about to talk about.
And that is, you know, Patty has been keeping track of this, and we've been talking about a lot of other things, but she wrote a great piece. You can go to my website for all the op-eds and our new Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast. But, you know, we, under the guise of economic development, there's economic development offices at the state, at the county, at the local levels. And that, you know, economic development sounds good. It sounds like progress. It sounds like flourishing. It sounds like prosperity. But in essence, what these government economic development offices are doing is they are picking winners and losers. So they'll say, hey, company, come to our state, our county, or our city, and you won't have to pay all the taxes that everybody else does. And so it's picking winners and losers. And in this is from the Center Square. It says a new company is set to receive $5.5 million in tax incentives to open a second headquarters in Colorado, Governor Jared Polis, his administration announced Tuesday. Marqeta, a card and payment platform, will receive a 5.5 job growth incentive tax credit to open a location in the Denver metro area. The state's Economic Development Commission approved the and there you're hearing the word bureaucrat. Whenever you hear commission, okay, they're unelected, they're appointed, and they're making these decisions. Okay, so the state's Economic Development Commission approved the tax credit on June 18th to help secure the company's second headquarters. Polis welcomed the company in a statement and touted Colorado as a hub for innovation and the entrepreneurial spirit. Critics of business subsidies, however, question why tax incentives are needed if a state already has a welcoming business environment. You think? And it says, if Colorado's workforce quality of life and cost of doing businesses are so great, then why does the state need to bribe companies with millions of dollars to do business there? The thing is, it doesn't, said John Mozina, president of the Center for Economic Accountability, which researches business subsidies and tax incentives from a free market perspective. Pretty good question, Steve, don't you think?
You know, time flies, and flies time. How long has it been since you and Patty were keeping that running tally of tax incentives? That you had found them and you just started adding them up?
Yeah, and it was over $1 billion.
Well, yeah, it quickly got up to over $1 billion. Mm-hmm. So we're letting companies off the hook for amounts of money that are quickly reach that level. And who's making up the difference?
Who is making up the difference? And, you know, the other dot to connect, and this seems like it's so obvious, is here you have Polis. You know, he did another executive order regarding that Colorado's in a disaster. And in that executive order is, you know, limiting how many people can meet, how many people can go to restaurants. And it's killing It's killing our hospitality industry. It's killing many of these restaurants. There are some restaurants that I drive by now, Steve, and they have not opened back up. And so how is it that you would use your power to close these people down, and then over here, you're giving tax incentives to somebody else? If, in fact, this company says, hey, if we pay less in taxes, it's better for our business, it's better for our business environment. Well, you know what? How about lower taxes across the board for everybody? How about lowering rules and regulations across the spectrum for everybody, Steve?
Well, we're talking, obviously, about the corporate level here and level of business, but it has a trickle down and trickle over to the same mindset for individuals and their taxes as well.
Absolutely. And when Colorado is giving these tax incentives over here, you're in the question on the table, you said, who's paying for that? We're paying for that. You know, we saw what they did at this last legislative session is they did everything they could to raise taxes on everyday hardworking people, on our small businesses. They're going to try to take a swipe at Tabor, Colorado's Taxpayers Bill of Rights, at this next, at the ballot box in November. And they just want more money. They just want more. When is it going to be enough? How much is enough, Steve?
Well, and that's as long as I've been doing this, you know, show with you, and even before that, the mindset has never been less government. It's always let's get more from the taxpayers, one way or another. And we play all kinds of games. We use the word fee mm-hmm. instead of tax, mm-hmm. and but it's always more. We need more revenue. Never less government. And like you said, we've seen the bureaucracies grow, unelected officials. It's just bad all the way around.
And so this is going to be a really important election. And as we've talked about it, my friends Reggie Carr and Johnny Thomas have been in the entertainment business, the black entertainment business, for many years. They are committed to do what they can to get President Trump reelected. And they are starting this minority bus tour. They have this big bus. We need to wrap it, a vinyl wrap, which is the cost on that is $10,000. And we are raising that. There's been money that's been promised to them, and it has not come through by kind of different establishment people. And so we grassroots, we have got to raise this money. And we are doing a great job. I haven't gotten accounting on it as of yesterday. But, we're getting closer and closer. So to each of you out there that is contributing, first of all, thank you. Second of all, for every $50 that you contribute, you'll receive one of their very cool battle masks. And so what you do is go to I'm a Trumpster, imatrumpster.com, contribute, and then email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. We're going to have a kickoff. Actually, I think they're going to already be out there because we're going to do this after the 4th of July. But we're going to have a big party with the bus, and we thought we were going to have it this week, but we just can't get it together for this Friday. So it's going to be after the 4th of July. I'll be in touch with all of you about that. So go to I'm a Trumpster, imatrumpster.com, contribute for every $50. You get a really cool battle mask. On one side, it says America Works Together. And then on the other side, it's I'm a Trumpster. So pretty interesting. And then let me know so that we can keep track of that and keep you on that guest list. And then before we go to break, one of my valued partners is Hooters Restaurants, and they have five locations here in Colorado: Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. They're open for dine-in, to-go, delivery, and curbside service. They are having happy hour Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. That's for dine-in. And then also Wednesday. It's Wednesday. So it's Wednesday, Steve. Ha! Yeah. All the wings you can eat for $15.99.
I can't say woohoo like the camel did at the start of the show, but woohoo.
Yeah. And they have lunch specials every day, Monday through Friday, 11 to 3 p.m. Kids eat free, dine in or to go. So go to order.hooters.com for more information. That's order.hooters.com. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Tim McCormick. And he is a candidate for district attorney in Broomfield and Adams County. Our counties. And my friends, these races are so, so important. George Soros has been out there buying DA races across the U.S. He tried to buy the DA race in Jeffco the last election cycle. And as we're seeing now with the destruction of our cities, And this attack on our police officers and our justice system, in order for people to be able to thrive and flourish, there needs to be law and order. And so that's why these races are so important. So stay tuned. We'll go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Tim McCormick.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And be sure and go over to Facebook and give us a like also. On the line with me is Tim McCormick. He is a candidate for district attorney in Broomfield and Adams County. Tim McCormick, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Kim, and good morning to your listeners as well. Thank you for having me on.
Well, most definitely. I feel like our listeners know you. However, you know, not everybody listens every time. We're getting new listeners. So very quickly, introduce yourself. Tell our listeners a little bit about you.
You bet. My name is Tim McCormick. I'm running for district attorney for Adams and Broomfield counties, and I'm the most experienced prosecutor, attorney, and criminal justice candidate in this race. I intend on using my 28 years of experience to return integrity, unbiased decision-making, and servant leadership back to the office of district attorney. Quite frankly, we've talked about this. My position is that the district attorney's office shouldn't be about political future, political opportunities, or launching pad. It should be about who's best prepared to give public safety to their constituents. I was born in Great Falls, Montana, graduated from Grand Junction High School, got my degrees from Colorado State University and Creighton School of Law, and I've lived in Adams County for the last 20 years where I raised my family.
Well, there you have it. And boy, oh boy, Tim McCormick, we are seeing how important law and order is, because we are seeing the opposite of law and order is chaos and confusion.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Rule of law is kind of taking a hit here as we go along. And I think, unfortunately, what we see are politics put way ahead of public safety and concern for your citizens and your constituents. And we've talked about this before, too, when we use the term activist DAs. These are individuals who have been put in these positions and who come out and say that they are going to not prosecute a certain class of crimes for whatever reason. Now, you know, the legislature makes the crime, the attorney, district attorney, city attorney, they're the ones that are supposed to enforce it. But to come out and say that you're not going to enforce a particular law that's on the books is a little counter to your oath.
Well, I have to tell you, Tim McCormick, a few weeks ago, right after Memorial Day, so I think it was the week after that, I was I was coming back into town, and I thought, you know, I'm going to stop by downtown, see the Capitol, see what's going on down there. It was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The protesters were organizing, and you know, the right to assemble, peaceful assembly, that is a sacred thing. People should be able to do that, but it's when then it moves over to destruction that it's not okay. There's no way that you can break stuff up and call it peaceful. There's just, it doesn't work that way. And I drove by the Brown Palace, which, you know, has been a jewel of downtown for so many years. And the windows were boarded up. The boards were on the inside, and I could see that the windows were broken. And it's like, how is this happening? How can we have this destruction of property and zero accountability by the prosecutors in their respective jurisdictions? How can that be?
Well, I agree. First of all, the right to peaceful assembly is, you know, guaranteed to everybody under the First Amendment. That's I don't think that's an issue, and I think people enjoy robust protests, like peaceful protests, like we've seen in some instances. But when you cross that line, when you cross over to wanton and willful destruction of property, whether it's public property, whether it's personal property, businesses, etc. Absolutely, that there are laws on the books, and we talked about that. Inciting a riot can be a felony if you bring weapons to it. It's a misdemeanor if you're out there inciting a riot. I don't know about you or your listeners, but I'm looking at the TV every night and I see that. I've also seen the horrific pictures of the damage done in downtown Denver. Who's going to pay for that? That's taxpayers have to pay that. That's your money that you pay down there to keep that city going, keep those buildings up. That's you have to pay for that. Yet I don't know of any concerted effort to prosecute those individuals for that. That's property destruction. That, depending on the amount, it could be a felony, it could be a misdemeanor. But yes, a concerted effort to go and do that. Now, you know, some of the excuses that I've heard is, oh, well, they were, you know, exercising their First Amendment right. I don't see anywhere in the Constitution where it says it's okay to destroy property.
Absolutely not. And I was talking with some friends, and one of them said, and she's an immigrant, loves the American idea. And she said, those people that have destroyed that property, they should have to pay to get to make it whole and clean up the mess that they made. And the other woman said, well, they're not going to do that. And it's like, well, yeah, but that is kind of the law and order, is if you destroy it, you need to make restitution. And that is just not happening in many of our cities right now. I mean, what's happening up in Seattle has just been, it's just been mind-boggling to me, Tim McCormick. And that is why, you know, law and order and the laws, I mean, I know that in the district attorney's office, you don't really interpret the law, but all the laws that we make really should pass the mustard of the vision of the Declaration, that all men are created equal and they have these rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. The Constitution was put in place. So, you know, all our laws, I feel, really should cut the mustard of the Declaration and the Constitution. But if it's a bad law, we need to change it, is what we need to do.
Well, and absolutely. And, of course, that, you know, that that's taken care of at the legislature. Now, district attorneys, local district attorneys, including the Colorado District Attorneys Council, they have some they have an ability to go down and testify in regards to certain bills or talk about the impacts, both negative and positive, of that. But I agree. I mean, you know, I've said this to you before. I believe in and will defend the Constitution. I stand for the rule of law and will always provide due process. I mean, I'm going to stand against violence. I'm going to stand with every law-abiding citizen who wants decency, safety, and security. And as far as I'm concerned, every citizen has a right to be safe in their homes, in their workplace, and on their city streets. And, you know, it seems like things are changing constantly. I mean, what we're talking about now could be totally different in a couple hours. So what I saw in Seattle and seeing some of these other cities, I can't understand why they're allowed to go out and do this without any repercussions. I think law enforcement, when you look at that, when you talk to them, they're ready to go in and do their job. Of course, this has now become highly charged with them, and their job, I guess, in going into these things has become even more dangerous. But they're ready to do that, to uphold their oath. Sometimes I wish certain elected officials would do the same.
Well, and elected officials really need to be standing for law and order. You mentioned words that I think most people want. You said, you know, we want decency and we want safety in our neighborhoods, so that if we have law and order, then things work. People are then able to go out and work and take care of their families and do all the things that we love. Go for a walk, not have to be worried that you know, Tim McCormick, I have seen videos in New York or different cities of little old ladies or little old men walking down the sidewalk and somebody just hitting them, knocking them down. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's mm-hmm. not okay. So final thought, we're just about out of time. Tim McCormick, what's sure. your final thought?
Well, you know, I've seen those videos too. And when you go back and do the background and the research, you find out that those individuals that are committing those kinds of career criminals that have been the recipient of relaxed bail reforms or lack of prosecution in the courts up there. That's New York. I hope Colorado doesn't turn into that. Obviously, I have some concerns about that, too, as do most people in law enforcement. But the bottom line is this. We need people that are willing to stand up there and fight for their communities to protect them and hold people accountable. I hope your listeners who live in Adams and Broomfield counties will look me up. It's McCormickforDA.com. Check your candidates, know their agenda, know who's backing them, and I'd appreciate your vote and support, Kim. And thank you so much for having me on again. I always enjoy our conversations, and I tell your listeners to have a great day.
Most definitely. And McCormick is spelled McCormack. So, again, what is that website?
McCormickforDA.com, McCormackforDA.com.
Okay, great. Well, we'll talk to you very soon. Thank you so much, Tim McCormick, and keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you, Kim.
Okay. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, Law and Order. What happened to the market yesterday? Was there a law and order in the market yesterday?
You know, it actually, I would say there was. I was thinking that yesterday just kind of felt, Kim, like a normal, pretty good day.
I'm knocking on wood, okay? I'm knocking on wood here.
That's right. We didn't have any major, huge back-and-forth swings or breathtaking moves. I mean, the markets just kind of had a decent move up. The Dow was up about 131 points, about 0.5%. NASDAQ was able to gain a little higher percentage, about 0.75, about 75 points yesterday. Now, one thing I didn't like about yesterday was that, you know, we started coming down later in the day and gave back a decent part of the gains. The NASDAQ had a gap where it started off, you know, the gap higher than where it closed the day before. And if you look at just kind of the little bar on the chart from yesterday, it closed right on its can right at the end of the day. So to me, the NASDAQ does look a little bit extended here. Again, I've been speaking a bit about maybe it's not a bad idea to take a few chips off the table, mm-hmm, Kim. I'm not saying sell everything you have, but take a hard look at some of your holdings, maybe, especially if you're an individual stock investor, trader, and think about lightening up just a little bit, because I think, again, the NASDAQ looks a little bit extended to me. If that's pulling back, you know, your other indexes are probably not going to be going exactly the opposite direction. The futures this morning are down a couple hundred on the Dow, so we'll see. We could start lower and then turn around and end higher for the day.
Well, and that's why, you know, I was thinking as you were talking about that, Jason, that it's so important to have a plan. You know, you have your goal, you have your plan, and what you're talking about is really more kind of like tweaking. And so, you know, I think it's important to you know, on a regular basis, just kind of assess asset allocation, you know, take your, you know, temperature on your risk tolerance. And, you know, is there something we need to tweak here or there? And you and all the folks over there at Presidential Wealth Management, you know, you really sit down and talk with people about their economic well-being. So, you know, I think people should give you a call at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600, or check out our landing page together. It's very cool, airpresidential.com.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. We have many wonderful advisors at Presidential, some great guys, some great gals. I'll tell you, we don't have too many folks that are wet behind the ears or, you know, in Kansas or Nebraska. I guess they would call them a hayseed, wouldn't they, Kim?
That's what they would. And, yes, because I'm from Kansas, I would know that.
Well, I figured you would. So, but, no, our advisors have a decent amount of experience. We've seen some good stuff. We've seen some bad stuff. Nobody's ever seen everything. Even when you think you have, you get taught a new lesson to humble you. But we do have experience, and you wouldn't be talking to somebody who's having to read off of cue cards, I'll tell you that.
That is for sure. So, Jason McBride, thank you so much. That's Presidential Wealth Management, 303-694-1600. Have a great day, Jason.
You too, Kim.
And we'll be right back. I cannot wait to have this conversation. I know producer Steve is excited about it as well. On the line is Anthony Davies, and he has co-authored a book, Cooperation and Coercion, How Busy Buddies Became Busy Bullies and What That Means for Economics and Politics. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. It highlights our upcoming guests. We have our new Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast featured there, as well as some great op-eds. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. We'd greatly appreciate that. On the line with me this morning is Anthony Davies. He's an associate professor of economics at Duquesne University. He's co-authored Cooperation and Coercion, How Busy Buddies Became Busy Bullies and What That Means for Economics and Politics. His co-author, James Harrigan, is managing director of the Freedom Center at the University of Arizona. Together, they host the weekly podcast Words and Numbers, and they are distinguished fellows at the Foundation for Economic Education. Anthony Davies, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, most definitely, this is a fascinating subject. With the coronavirus crisis, it's led to unprecedented coercion. Could there have been a better way, or can there be a better way, Anthony?
There's always a better way. The trick is determining what problem is appropriate for cooperation, what's appropriate for coercion. And the COVID is an interesting case because we have some beautiful examples of cooperation. There was a store very early on out in the Midwest that decided it was going to reserve the early hours for the elderly when the store was cleanest to keep other people out so that they could be safer. And it was a good idea. And what happened? Other stores started adopting this. And before you know it, coast to coast, stores were doing this. This was not a government directive. It was cooperation. Somebody had an idea. Somebody else said, that's a good idea, and it spread.
You know, that's so interesting that you would say that because, you know, I've thought about, like, all of this mandatory mask wearing. You know, people that may have a health issue, you know, I think they're still concerned about going out, and they seem to find some comfort in everybody having to wear masks. I see this mandatory mask wearing as a bit more of a submission because studies show that the virus is so small that unless you have like an N95 mask, it doesn't really work. And so I'm seeing this a bit as a form of submission. And so it's kind of become a political thing. And so I'm thinking, what could be the creative answer to that? And I guess it's something just kind of like what you described is, you know, when a store or a church is, you know, the first thing in the morning, it's very clean. So you could have everybody that's concerned about wanting people to wear masks, that they could go to like the early service. And then after that, all the other services for church could be, you know, whoever wants to come. It seems like we could get creative, but my gosh, they're using so much coercion on this, Anthony.
Yes, this is correct. And the thing we have to keep in mind is businesses are very interested in their customers staying healthy so that they can come back and spend even more money. You know, we think of this as, we say businesses are profit motivated, as if somehow that means they don't care about their customers. Quite the contrary. A profit motivation makes the business hyper-focused on what the customer wants and what they can do for the customer. When you use coercion, by contrast, you have the government, someone at the top making a decision and saying everybody's got to fall into line. The big problem there is the guy who's making the decision simply doesn't have enough information to be able to make decisions for people that are better than decisions they could make for themselves. He doesn't know the particular circumstances that people are under, what their constraints are, what their needs are. But if you leave people alone in cooperation, they do have that information. They can take that into account.
Well, in your title of your book, you now have the term busy bullies. And I thought that was a fascinating term. So expound on that a bit, Anthony.
Well, this is funny because it starts off with the busy buddy. And we all know who busy buddies are. A lot of us have some of them in our families who are going to stick their nose in your business and tell you how you should live and what you should be doing. And, of course, the problem is that people have different circumstances. They have different needs, different goals, these sorts of things. And what may be a good decision for me isn't necessarily a good decision for you. And so when I stick my nose in your business and I say, well, you should be doing things this way, that's not good for you. It doesn't take into account your circumstances. Now, that's a busybody. What happens when you empower a busybody through government? He becomes a busy bully. And now he's got the force of government behind him. Good case in point, in Philadelphia last year, year before, some busy buddies decided that kids should not be drinking so much soda, and so we're going to put a 20% tax on sugary drinks and force them to drink less. That's a busy bully, deciding for you what is good for you rather than letting you decide for yourself.
Okay, Anthony, then that goes to, there's a lot of that going on in America right now, and a lot of it, I think, is through the administrative state, where we have unaccountable and elected bureaucrats that are making decisions on many of these things. You know, we're seeing a lot of that, like at the health departments. You know, we've seen out here in Colorado closing down businesses. I know it's different from state to state, but it seems like there's a lot of bullying in closing down businesses. And you mentioned that each business is unique. They will make decisions. You know, I think they could say this is a mask wearing business or this is not. But I don't think government should be making those choices.
No, this is the thing we have to keep in mind. We have this tendency to think of politicians and bureaucrats as being somehow smarter than the rest of us. They're human beings just like the rest of us, and they're going to make their best guess as to what we should or shouldn't do. The major problem is they simply don't know our circumstances. And so what the best thing a politician or a bureaucrat can do is to set up rules that prevent people from harming each other, but otherwise leave them alone to figure out what's going to work. Now, people aren't always going to get it right. We'll come up with some idea, and it'll be a bad idea. But here's the important thing. With cooperation, when we see that something isn't working, we can switch. We say, look, this isn't working. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to go do something else. The problem with coercion is that when politicians and bureaucrats impose a decision that doesn't work, what happens most often when they see it's not working is they want to spend more money.
True that. Because, you know, it's difficult, I think, for us as human beings to admit when we're wrong. But there is also really strength in that. And so politicians and bureaucrats, when they're wrong, it actually hurts people. So, Anthony, let's unpack this just a little bit, though, because out here in Colorado, actually, I think nationally as well, I'm talking about mask wearing, it says, you do not wear a mask for you. You wear a mask to protect the other person. And I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, now how does that work? Because if the other person's wearing a mask, then that should be protecting them. And so I looked at it, I'm thinking, this doesn't make a lot of sense. It seems very coercive. But then we saw now, you know, Governor Newsom out in California is now saying that people need to wear masks throughout the state. And science is showing that the virus is so small that it can get through, you know, quote unquote, a face covering. And so it's so interesting to me to see this coercion that's going on about this, Anthony.
Yeah, and I'm not an epidemiologist, so I can't say much about whether masks do or do not work. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I don't know. But when it comes to masks, it's a relatively small thing, right? It's an annoyance. this kind of thing. But you put your finger on the problem. When we use coercion, somebody at the top saying you are going to do this, if it's the wrong decision, well, they've got all of us wearing masks unnecessarily. The larger problem is when they make a decision that has much greater impact, like you're going to shut down your business for 3 months. This is a tremendous cost on the economy. It's cost us in total about $3 trillion so far. Now, the question is, was it a good idea? Was it not a good idea? They don't know. But the cost of them being wrong was astronomical.
Well, and so to that, it seems like there should have been a more measured approach. And again, you're seeing that it's different from state to state. And I was very pleased that President Trump honored our form of government, federalism, where states could actually make different decisions on that, and we'd see different states and how that would work. But the fact that it shut down all these businesses, it was very, very harmful, Anthony.
It was, and I think you put your finger on the right thing here, that when we decide that, okay, here's a problem, we're going to have to use coercion, we've got to shut down businesses, the best way to do it is to do it at the local level. Let the local governments decide for themselves whether they should or should not shut down, and then whatever they can't handle, let the states handle. Don't invoke the federal government unless your problem is so huge that it's something state and local governments can't handle. And when you govern in that fashion, starting at the local level, you get a whole bunch of experiments. And so we can look, we can say, look, this shutting down businesses, it worked here or it didn't work there. And we can see why it worked here and why it didn't work there. And we can learn. But when we impose decisions at the very top, at the federal level, or even sometimes at the state level, you don't get that experimentation. We can't point to other cases and say, look, this is what they did, something different, and it came out differently.
Okay. And to that, a measured response. Out here in Colorado, Mayor Hancock of Denver came out very early and said, we are closing businesses down, or restaurants and bars and taverns, for 8 weeks. That's a long time. And early on, we didn't know quite what was going on. So, I think we thought we needed to do something because we just didn't know exactly what was happening with this virus. But I think a measured response and starting at the local level is really important. So what that would look like to me, Anthony, would be, we don't know what's going on here, but we're going to take a pause for a couple of weeks so that we can get our brains around this. A measured response seems like that would have been better for the economy than, some of these places where they shut down things for so long.
Not just a measured response, but to build into it benchmarks and to say something at the outset like, look, if indeed we shut down and we determine that the number of cases that are coming up are far less than what we had anticipated, then we're going to back off of that immediately because clearly we made a wrong decision. That discussion never occurred. The focus for politicians was entirely on one thing, limiting the number of deaths due to coronavirus. They completely ignored the number of deaths that were going to come about because of people becoming despondent, losing their jobs, and domestic violence and suicide that all comes about with the poverty and the stress of shutting down the economy. They were completely oblivious to that. Their focus was solely on this one thing, and that was clearly not a measured response.
Fascinating. So, Anthony, let's go to break. Really important conversation here. I'm talking with Anthony Davies. He's an associate professor of economics at Duquesne, and he co-authored this book, Cooperation and Coercion, How Busy Buddies Became Busy Bullies and What That Means for Economics and Politics. So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Anthony Davies.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. We'd greatly appreciate that. On the line with me is Anthony Davies. He co-authored the book Cooperation Coercion, How Busy Buddies Became Busy Bullies and What That Means for Economics and Politics. Anthony, there were some different things that you had sent over, your PR person had sent over, and I thought this was a very important question and to ask you. You said, why, if it saves just one life, is an empty slogan that leads to bad policy? And we have heard that, if it saves just one life, but then we've seen, you know, it's there's been a lot of lives that their economic well-being has been destroyed.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that we have to keep in mind is you can't just save one life. Anything you do in the effort of saving lives in one place are going to cost you lives somewhere else. And of course, your goal is that the ones that you save outnumber the ones that you lose, but there's always a trade-off. It occurs everywhere. Good case in point, we talk about seatbelt use, mandatory seatbelt use, airbags in cars, and these things save lives. They save lives of the people in the cars. But what we have found is that it costs lives amongst pedestrians and bicyclists because the driver, because he's in a safer car, will tend to drive less carefully. And all those safety features protect him. They don't protect the people outside the car. And so you get a trade-off. Now, is the trade-off worthwhile? Absolutely it is. The number of lives you save from the seatbelts and the airbags far outweighs the number that you lose, but there is a trade-off. Similarly here, we shut down the economy and we save lives from COVID, but we lose lives and livelihoods from the shutdown of the economy. And what's happening as the data is coming in, it seems to be the case that the number of lives and livelihoods we lost is far outweighing what we saved in terms of COVID deaths.
So who pays for that? How are people made whole?
Well, we all pay for that. And we're paying for it now with our whatever it is, 16, 17% unemployment rate. Our GDP is going to be down by 10% or so. And people will have a tendency to say, well, you're just talking about dollars. Yeah, but remember what we mean is dollars. These are dollars that feed people's families, right? That pay for children's schooling, that keep roofs over our heads. They are important. Now, they may not be as important as a life, but they're certainly very important. And now the question comes in, how many lives did we save and what did it cost us? It turns out that when all the dust is settling, it's looking like what we spent to save lives from COVID is orders of magnitude more than what it would have cost to save lives from things like liver disease or malaria. There were other ways we could, if our goal was to save lives, there were other ways we could have spent this $3 or $4 trillion to save way more people than what we saved from COVID. So that tells me this was not a good trade-off.
Okay, so we've talked about the economic busy bully, if you will, but you mention in your title what this means for politics. So what's your thoughts on that, Anthony?
One of the things that we have to be very careful of, and this has been happening over the past century, something will come along, be it a war or be it terrorism or be it COVID virus, something like that, and people become scared and they want answers, they want solutions, and politicians step forward and they say, I have a plan for that. I'm going to fix this problem. And we all say, thank God, and we vote for this person. And of course, the person isn't any more capable of solving the problem than we are. In fact, in a lot of cases, less capable of solving the problem than we are. But because we're afraid, we turn to this person and we say, take some of our liberty, take some of the power away from the people, give it to the government because you promised you'll solve this. And you keep rinsing and repeating and doing that decade after decade. And before you know it, you have a government with tremendous overreach, exercising power far beyond what it was designed to do.
Well, we're seeing that play out, Anthony. So how do we get it back? Because, as you mentioned, people are scared. I mean, we saw the whole fear thing. You know, it played out in the media, social media. I mean, you watch TV and along the, you know, the bottom of the screen, you're seeing deaths, you know, all these deaths. It has scared people to death. And many people have practically just thrown our civil liberties into the laps of these politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties who I affectionately call PBIs. But people have just thrown our civil rights in many ways. And if you stand for your civil rights, for example, and you know, on the signs that are over I-25 here, they're supposed to, you know, tell you about if there's a traffic jam or, you know, what it looks like as you're going into town. But it says, stay home, save a life. Well, you know, the opposite of that is then if you're not staying home, you want to kill somebody. I mean, the narratives got so weird to me, Anthony.
Yeah, this is right. One of the things we've got to be careful of is that remember that the mainstream media's goal is not to deliver us news. It's to deliver advertising space. And so to deliver the advertising space, they have to get people's attentions. And they get people's attention by showing things that are out of the ordinary, things that are salacious, things that are scary. And so the mainstream media will push on us a vision of the world that's highly distorted. You watch the news and you'll think that COVID is everywhere and you just sneeze and you're going to die, or there are riots everywhere. Is there some of this going on? Yes, there is. Is it nearly as widespread as what you would think from watching the evening news? No, it isn't. It's nowhere close to that. And so one of the things that people should do is to take a deep breath and understand that what you're looking at when you see the news is a distorted picture of the world. The world is actually much, much, much better than what you're seeing. That doesn't mean we don't have problems, but it does mean that the problems are much more under control. And so we need to think very carefully before we turn to politicians and say, take some of my power, take some of my liberty and make decisions for me.
Well, that has happened. How will we walk this back, Anthony?
I don't know the answer to that, but I could tell you if we don't walk it back, it's going to get walked back for us, and it's going to get walked back for us because we're reaching a point, probably within the next 10 to 20 years, where it will be mathematically impossible for the federal government to continue exercising the power it's exercising. There simply isn't enough money for the federal government to continue the way it has been doing. And when that comes to pass in about a decade, perhaps two at the outside, what we're going to see is a return to federalism. The federal government is going to devolve power back to the states, which hopefully will devolve some power back to the local governments. And we'll start to see a United States that looks a lot more similar to what the founders had in mind than what we've experienced over the past 70 years.
It seems to me that there's going to be a real ugly period to go through to get it back to that, Anthony. What's your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I think so. There's a transition, right? I put a lot of faith in people. People are generally speaking very good, very well-meaning. They care about their neighbors. And if you leave them alone, they'll do the right thing. They won't always do the right thing. They won't always get it right. But in general, they will. And so I put a lot of faith in the people. And if you want an example, look to the Great Depression. We had 10 years of huge unemployment, 25% unemployment. GDP was down 25%. This goes on for 10 years. And yet when we came out of it, what did we get? We got cures for diseases that used to kill millions. We got the invention of the computer. We got the moon landing. We're now on Mars. We have computers. We have standards of living that are higher than human beings have ever seen in the history of human beings. All of that came about after that 10 years of hardship. I think we're going to have 10 years of hardship, but I'm looking very forward to what comes next.
Love that. That great positive note. So we've got really a couple of minutes here, Anthony. What would be the final thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners? And this is Anthony Davies, Associate Professor of Economics at Duquesne University. So what's the final thought that you would leave with us?
The final thought is trust your neighbor. People are generally good, they're generally well-meaning, and if you leave them alone to do their own thing, provided you have a government in place that prevents people from harming each other, generally good things happen.
Okay, and Anthony, it sounds like a very interesting book, Cooperation and Coercion, How Busy Buddies Became Busy Bullies and What That Means for Economics and Politics. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
My pleasure, thank you.
Boy, Steve, you know, I didn't think I was going to get that message of hope there. I love that. That's really great because there's so much bad news out there.
The last 5 minutes, that really came together for me, talking about what might be happening It might take a couple decades to get there, but that was good stuff.
You know, and we think about, you know, we stand on the shoulders of giants as we go back in our history, and we can't let this history be torn down like we're seeing in these different cities. These men were not perfect, and the implication by the people that are tearing all this down is that they're perfect is not correct. And so we need to learn from our history, and we can never learn from our history if we tear it down. But I really enjoyed the conversation with Anthony Davies today. And our quote, I went to economics, so Frederick Bastiat, for our quote, and he said that when plunder becomes a way of life for a group of men in a society, over the course of time, they create for themselves a legal system that authorizes it and a moral code that glorifies it. And that will circle back to what we saw with the Colorado Office of Economic Development giving out favors to one company over another. So, my friends, we need to walk that back and not let that happen. So today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
KLZ AM HD Denver, the source AM and FM. AM 560 and 100.7 FM. 560thesource.com.